Honorable Kwanwa from the UGM, that's the only apology we have. Thank you. Let's go straight to the presentation. Maybe that's for us to know who is here to introduce your chief. I will ask the members of the committee to introduce themselves when that is.
Thank you very much, Chair. Joining members of the planning committee, our privilege and an honour to be here to make this presentation on behalf of the Exxon. My name is Chair Kirby, and I'm the CEO of the Exxon team, and I'll introduce my colleagues who are going to help make the presentation here. And to my left, and then Principal Order, that's a Professor Vice President Dye, Professor Dimitri Lazarov, Dr. Greg Houston, Dr. Peter Jacobs, followed after that, and my last colleague on the left there, Professor Charlene Swart. I'd like to thank them for their participation to help in the compiling of the documents, and I've heard comments from across the way about colleagues. We're very aware of that, but you will find it true in the presentation of the year as we can. I'm going to begin with the, I know you all have hard copies. I'm going to begin with the slide number 3, which gives the indication of the production population. Now, I quickly want to draw your attention to the very positive trend that we've been seeing in the slide here. So the first three bars here, on the slide here, the first three bars on the left-hand side show the declining numbers of people. Show the numbers of people who would have complete primary education sometime here, what are those numbers? It's always complicated. So you've seen that the numbers of people who are taking primary school are fully, as in that little mark. But what it really means is that that's the number of people who only have primary school. So that's the people. So that number of people who only primary school is the number of people in secondary education. Generally on an upward trend, and higher education, as you can see there, is moving upwards. The next slide elaborates on that, and I'd like to draw your attention to the bottom row there. I think that's the important one here, of the numbers of tertiary graduates. You'll see between 2010 and 2014, that number has gone up in that period of about 5 years, by more than half a million. And then that's quite an extraordinary increase in the number of the students who are completing. It really is an important figure to talk about. Later on, when we're talking about skills are different, we can talk about the significance of the curriculum and to measure again. Our target is an important thing for us to be very aware of. Our target in relation to the NDPs has by 2030 came on the university graduates. So grow as this number has over the years, the last 5 years, we're needing to expand this number quite dramatically within the next 15 years. So in the next 15 years, we've got the increase in by 7 million graduates a year. The next slide is again an evaluation of what we have there, and it shows you the numbers of students who enrolled between 2010 and 2013 in public universities, local private universities. Those numbers are not yet dramatic. I really have any orders from like 80,000 students on my final education in the country. And that number will go up. But the public enrollment has gone up between 2010 and 2013 by almost 100,000. A short comment quickly on our budgetary allocation again. The important point here is a little bit of that our budgetary allocation will be in the slide. This slide gives you an indication of this table here. So what we're saying here is that we're spending out of our budget for the university sector more than we are paying spending for the school sector. But that the percentage of our allocation is still lower than other countries. The percentage that we allocate to other countries. The concern here is if we are wanting to increase the number of students by 7 million in the next 15 years, the concern is really about the allocation of how it can come out. This is the description of what the full budget spending in the country is. And it simply shows what we have spent in terms of the different allocations. This is the budget for higher education. As you see there, the total budget has gone from 2012 to 2015 by about 10 billion rand. This is the slide that I showed you earlier. And what you see in this slide here is where South Africa stands in relation to peers around the world in terms of our allocation. The important country for us to keep going on there is the most interesting one is India. You take middle income countries. You can see here we're spending less than 0.6 of our budget on our education. India has gone beyond 1.2%. In other words, they're spending twice the proportion that we are. And that's a really important comparison to be keeping in mind. We can't invest in very much more bigger countries like Canada and Denmark. What are we seeing in terms of PhD graduates? What's the other concern? So we are saying that we want by 2030 to be able to be producing 5,000 graduates PhD per annum. That number is 1323 in 2010. We don't have access to all the information providing for you. But the point to make is about the trend. The trends are not positive for PhD. They may be so for other qualification levels, but for PhD, and of course we have a direct concern about that in the SSRC. The numbers are clearly a fact in their growth. It's that bottom line in the economy. Again, a little more about the spend there on the student funding, and of course, the fact is the growth of our attention gap. This compared to last year, spending less, our allocation to this fact, 2014, by 2015, 2016. Budgetary allocation was less than it was in 2014-2015. In absolute money terms, but of course in real terms, it's even more diminished. Where are we going to find, and so this is a discussion that we have today, where are we going to find money, increased funding for students? In the short term, of course, City University has allowed to come out of the university very recently. Every university is concerned about internal efficiency. So there's a lot of attention being paid in by the university to cut costs. Critically, this fact is that you can improve its efficiency. This fact is going to require a lot of our attention again. The main issue in the fact, right now is the repayment level, which is the low 10%. You are not repaying the money that is being made available to them. And so we need to, when we're not talking in the immediate term, how are we talking in the immediate term? I know that is a great deal of looking around the country about what we should be doing. The point that we want to make there is that that needs to be taken into account. We shouldn't be even thinking of dismantling this fact. We need to find ways of making it possible for this fact not only to be more efficient but allocation of funding, but also to in a way in which it's able to track and follow students after they have either graduated or the recipients of this fact of the funding. The task here that we're going to be putting together must, I think all of us understand, is seen as a really important intervention that is being made. The last point that we want you to make colleagues in but also we could be looking for funding, and we are simply making the what I think is an accepted consensus around the country at the moment now that we need something like a wealth tax. Wealthy people must be paying more than they currently do. But we also want to respond to the question of that the students raised about whether all the education should be key, and wanting to be making the point that people should be paying according to the ability. Simply because of the question of sustainability. So everybody, finally, again, from my side, the benefits of your arguing has to be making some contribution towards the repayment. Thank you very much. I'm going to hand over to Martin, Professor tonight.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair, Acting Chair, and honorable members for the opportunity to talk to you with regard to health issues. I will begin with a kind of overview, and then my colleague, Professor Navazalis, will come in and just hone in on some of the critical issues. To start with, I think that we need to acknowledge that our government has done well, or is doing well, by continuing to prioritize health issues and the way of addressing both poverty and inequality in our country. With regard to the issue that our research mentioned in HIV and AIDS, it's really commendable that we are providing from within our internal resources from our own interest up to 80% of the costs that are involved in the national response. I think that is very commendable. Also to start with, yes, overall, in terms of looking at the media performance of government on all the indicators, the intelligence of the government is in the way of absorbing and using the funds that have been allocated so far. To get back to the allocation, there's an amount of 324 million, 783 thousand, has been moved from other parts of the budget to health issues. And what's interesting is that most of these funds were accumulated from the successful implementation of the various cost containment measures as recommended by the National Treasury. Given what has just been said with regards to education, it's actually interesting to see, I know it's coincidental, but come up with any descriptions of the main funding that really the tertiary institutions need to involve, among others, in training of medical students. Because, for example, specifically in a lot of those countries, University of Greek Literature are the main beneficiary by getting additional money to expand medical students' programs. And also, there is the money provided for the public service declaration training authority, as well as the health and welfare education and training authority. I think this is timely given the situation that we just know in the past few weeks. As we are all aware, there is a large shortfall in the number of available medical doctors who hopefully are going to be at the heart of implementing the new national health insurance when we start to implement. So this is from in this particular context, some of the funds have been directed towards to helping out piloting of the health insurance plan. So this is really something we are even waiting to be completed, so that the national health insurance can be expanded as a some of the funds are earmarked for purchasing capital equipment, especially with the use of capital health projects, regulatory authority, an organization which is meant to address the Medicare Control Council. Clearly, this will help to expedite the approval of some of the newly developed network drugs and products. Because for a long time there has been this huge battle with the Medicare Control Council. Then another important allocation is going to what the South African Demographic and Health Survey. This is a survey which in many countries all over the world to undertake every 5 years. In our country since 2003. So actually a new VHS is required. And so now we can do that the best, because then we'll be able to update the strategic information that will be available, which can then inform policymakers and program implementers in the areas that require attention, among others, particularly in non-communicable diseases, as well as reproductive health and reproductive rights issues. I will pass from the next section to my colleague.
Overlay and underlay, especially in the country. Way back, burden of needs is not actually decreased. We have not taken the community of the that means they get out of the working tonight. So in terms of priority areas, next slide, primary health care is the area that will make or break, if you like, the gatekeeper of what's happening in this country and in this country. And the NFI, as it correctly stated at the time, is what is going to address to a significant extent equity and access to quality there is some equipment and money that has been put aside for inclusion, and that is well received. And then we need to get more in making people's lives easier. Even the campaign is that when we compare that to South Africa, we have the institutions and the institutions. If you compare the private sector, medical private sector, and the public private sector, in the number of parameters, what are the outset of the impact? Yes, there is a difference. About 10% in terms of attention to the patient, to the patient who sees the doctor, who is in worship, and so forth. About 10%. But the terrible difference of about 25% is what is on waiting time. The public sector is extremely bad for people waiting to get the drugs. So if we were to smarten up our system in terms of prescription, we are more than dollars that we use in terms of distribution of medicine, this protection of prescriptions, in the big drugs of life. And that involves systems we have to have systems in place that can make this reality. The question is then, it is something that it needs to involve to remove that. So the key message here is the accelerated implementation of the NFI. And we are committed, and of course, some of you are committed to accelerate to address the systems. We need the health systems in terms of performance and in terms of resilience. We also need a coherent investment in health for intervention. And I mentioned some of studies that there are others. And nutrition security is still in the needs. Materials are in the country and needs to be there. And we need to make sure that we can actually get the people and components of government to work together. So, thank you. I hope you can hear me. Good work of my voice. Okay, we have to enhance intersectoral collaboration and cooperative development. At the moment, we are doing what we are doing in the local. And finally, in a complex domain like that, there is still something that we allocated to help people see health as a need. We can do it now, but we can do it together. And hopefully, we can do it.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would start with points of what would be the National Development Plan, looking at the situation. I don't see the recognition of the need for a professional professor to deal with the main transformative and development challenges. So far we have some challenges that have been in place itself, but we need capacity in place. But among key challenges identified in diagnostic treatment is the uneven state capacity, which leads to uneven performance between government departments and national level, and in local, provincial, and national governments. A number of iterations were suggested in NDPs to create a skilled and capable space. The trying to put MCDPS focusing on three interests: improving the effectiveness of the public sector, expanding partnerships to the private sector, and thirdly, strengthening the governance of state audits. However, we feel that these are not private interventions, but are frameworks which are mentioned, very focusing on grants and examples of partnerships with the private sector. It's not clear in the MBPPS, for example, how the project has been used to promote public sector privacy, or if it is possible. The exercise to ask for the inclusion of education and skills development in the medium term training policy, because it's just a environment of development of skills, so for the experience improves their effects. However, the question here is if and how the U.S. government at all levels is applying various interventions suggests that it can be done. For instance, apprenticeships and graduate training schemes for social services. It is also not clear how the fight is used to strengthen the state's role in developing skills in both the state and SOEs, where NDP recognizes skills services. We feel that improved systems only deliver good results if the officials implement the system in a kind of skill and motivation for the delivery of policy services. The challenge is to build a skill labor force, but also to be technical and management areas to improve their PC training and alignment of training with requirements and standards found in the private sector. The HSC is glad that there is mention of the development of a capital budget in Korea, so there is a fairly skilled and effective solitary shortfalls across the country. There are many different elements of this which I think are in the statement, which are pretty close. Because these are many such challenges that are faced across government at all levels. We welcome the refocus of the municipal system improvement grant and assume that it does. We know some of the challenges that have been identified in the process of the Greens and Kinetic grants in the past. Emphasis could have been made in the NCDGS on how the refocus is used to promote the development of skilled and capable employees. We feel that there is no need for words to express the intention, because sometimes words have direct action. Instead of just mentioning that there's a refocus, we need to require the NCDDS for some sort in much better time how the grant should be used in this way for the drivers. The HSRP is concerned that the emphasis is placed on rural local government drivers, and it says the right to see the system as well, to dispense urban local government drivers that face most serious challenges. There are many studies, recent studies over the past few years, which indicate that several urban structures also play a period of concern. Although the 2020 MGPPS identified partnerships with private sector as one of the requirements for the equitable sector, it is not clear. It is not clear how this is achieved. Instead, the statement focuses on federal partnerships in trade and partnerships in regions. The HSRP was welcomed by different measures that lead to improved partnerships with private sector on skills training and links to FPD training. The HSRP also notes that the budget will encourage more effective use of society organizations and services, particularly by increasing personal investment in non-profit organizations beyond a 4% annual increase. The HSRC welcomed the announcement in the 2015 NCDPS that work has begun to develop a uniform legislation framework to regulate extent of enterprise. However, we feel legislation alone is not sufficient. Part of the problem has to do with the human factor. And we feel more emphasis should be placed on ensuring accountability systems that are put in place. We also welcome mention of the effort by the government to stabilize several state-owned enterprises, as well as the commitment to receive fiscal support the spectrum company to also detach it, so that they don't get impacted by the difference. We feel that there are a number of challenges that are not addressed in the MTDS. One of these growth in managerial and policy stocks, which appears to be defined as the sector's benefit most of the wage for. Attention should be paid on motivation of the labor force to increase quality of work, services, and products in line with the health inflation wage increase. We think that attention of skilled labor management and increase of post-retirement contract of mentors, trainers, and skilled and experienced workers is critical for the development of skilled and capable states. There is need for improvement of the compensation system, including recourse on production and inadequate management and production, and increase in unqualified and extreme poverty. There is a need to improve IGR to achieve synergies and concerted planning for both delivery and maintenance. Part of the next challenge of the evaluation is the potential of procurement system to foster procurement between stringent measures to ensure quality delivery and prevent corruption in the system. The need to investigate innovation ways of better quality between indigenous recipients of services and service providers, local municipalities. In other words, there's a need to identify responsibility coming from both sides, instead of one way in which service is provided, and people are expecting service free of service, without any standard process. We feel that there's a need to make realistic announcements of growth here, so that the message is sent out that the state is great, and is a higher sacrifice on society as a whole, and standing expectations that are unrealistic. We feel that the need of a rebuilding strategy in the private sector and state, through coherent and consultative policy development, resulting in socially responsible private sector investment, critical to the partnership between state and civil society. We feel the need for strengthening of the social compact between state, private sector, labor, and civil society, in order to achieve grand bonds on key issues. We need to actually come together for fundamental issues that need to be addressed and share a clear, common approach. Finally, the SOE sector, and I might say first we haven't spent, we provided the talks in the commission, the SOE committee, in drafting the final reports, and there were many issues that were quite familiar, and some of them that we identified as clear. The most important is the issue of governance, is the cause of concern. And need resolution by providing more resources to strengthen the governance and accountability system of the economy. There is a need for fast-tracking of interventions to deal with challenges faced by SOE. Including assessment of investment in management at all levels, and capacity of management and employees for delivery on technology management. There is a need for an increase of accountability of the SOE within the public sphere, without critical interference in the affairs of the management and operations of the SOE. Thank you.
Really the big picture about how do you address or manage government income exactly what the minister's take-home message, that there requires more prudent management of incomes and expenses of the state, given the slowdown of the economy. There are several elements that I want to focus on in this broader contextual presentation. The first one is just to highlight some items that start in the minister's speech. The first one was that the observation and the acknowledgement that the economy is actually slowing down, and actually slowing down the pace much faster than anticipated in the past. And this is a serious concern. And then, of course, also to try and identify some of the drivers of this particular slowdown. And one of the key drivers being the weakening global economy. Well, the softening global economy for a small export-oriented economy, there is bound to be a negative or adverse impact. In addition to that, the investment climate, of course, has deteriorated quite significantly, as well as consumer confidence. Now, all these things taken together, they place a tremendous amount of pressure on government spending, specifically contracting or cutting your fiscal space on the side of incomes. In other words, what you see is there is a downward revision in tax revenue or anticipated tax revenue for the period, and the decline is anticipated to be collecting less, 7.6 billion rand less than anticipated. The budget deficit is unchanged, but we anticipate with the 2016 budget, there might be a slight uptick in the budget as a consequence of the broader systemic forces putting pressure on government fiscal policy. The higher government deficit is an ongoing concern, and it's anticipated that it's going to rise from 46% of GDP by 2017-2018, it should be reaching 60% of GDP. This, in addition, is another warning sign that there is need for very, very careful management of government income and expenditure on a broader macro level. Obviously, as a result of the global economic environment changing so rapidly against South Africa, the foreign deficit in trade has also expanded quite considerably or slightly, depending on where you're standing, whether you are standing on the side of the consumer goods or you stand on the side of capital goods, and capital goods is the main driver of our deficit at the moment. Government spending, especially government as an employer, and if you look at government's weight in the overall wage bill in South Africa, it accounts virtually for one-third of the overall wage bill in South Africa, and that is quite a large number of people dependent on the state for employment. That's not a small matter to consider. So this third take-home message is what I've been trying to drive home. The need for a prudent approach to efficient income and expense management on part of the state. However, there was also a strong message in the statement that the government is committed to to contain public spending and to manage borrowing aspects quite carefully. There has also been a very tough approach to the state entities. There is a commitment to increase the partnerships between the government and the private sector, specifically around public infrastructure. And then there is also being in the pipeline at least moving the increment of some taxes as we go forward. However, in all these areas, we have great uncertainty with regard to the capability and capacity of the state to effectively implement the planned interventions. Growth, as I indicated already, is a major concern. It has a decline, and there are a lot of commentators at the moment indicating that we are a little bit too optimistic even with 1.5% growth rate for the current period. Some economists indicate that we already have a contraction in the current period, and that should be a major concern, and of course it's got the overall macro indicators already highlighted earlier on. Another key issue is around quite incremental pressures on both consumers and the economy as a whole. Consumer price inflation is slightly lower, but as a result of the recent drops, we are anticipating price increases. We are currently, I think, benefiting from the low oil price internationally, actually giving us some room to contain. the involvement of the fact that it's feeding incremental projects, a new forum for business to make inputs in this business kind of forum, and they're removing another administrative obstacle that prevents or hampers public-private investment. Of course, the increased emphasis on manufacturing and, of course, exports in North Africa, those are welcoming developments. Infrastructure investment, I think, is an important and critical element in the South African economy for various reasons. And over the last few years, we have seen government putting money to increase investment in infrastructure. There has been specific emphasis on support for municipal planning infrastructure in order to help and facilitate the spatial dynamics or spatial changes that we have going through the South African economy or South African side more broadly. The investment in infrastructure at the moment is already pegged at around about 20% of GDP and set to increase. As I mentioned already, there has been a very heavy investment in social service delivery investments, such as schools, hospitals, housing, water, sanitation, and electrification. ESCOM, for example, has earmarked to have additional 23 million allocated in the NDDS. It is early days, in our view, to make a very, very good statement on transportation, communication, and communication infrastructure investment. Of course, there is the big commitment, both at level of the presidency and also with regard to Treasury, in order to figure out how to accelerate, how to expand job creation in South Africa. I think job creation is a priority mandate in the South African economy. And this is basically at three levels, not only expanding private and public sector employment, as already highlighted in the previous slide, from the expanding public sector employment to public wage, but really as other forms of employment that are more linked to social protection forms of employment. These are the elements that were highlighted. There's been a growth in public sector employment, both directly and indirectly in the state entities, and of course, as there is a pick up in infrastructure investment, there's likely to be an acceleration in public sector employment through that channel as well. Private sector employment in large is very, very muted at the moment, and of course, the current statistics that we saw coming out earlier this week of an uptick in unemployment rate published by the latest third quarter that the daily report, quarterly report survey, that is a cause for concern. Manufacturing and exports are not very labor intensive, and this is the area where we have to put a great emphasis. Right? It is always a contradiction to either emphasize the labor intensity of manufacturing and exports, or you quickly accelerate the skills and capability of the labor force to great upgrade of scale manufacturing and export potential into the global market. These are trade-offs and challenges that are not easy to make, and it requires for very careful mindsets. The employment tax incentive is mentioned in the medium-term budget policy statement, and the minister noted the positive impacts, but it's very hard to find very concrete evidence on these kinds of positive impacts. And as I indicated already, the employment tax incentive is largely geared towards the fact that creating more jobs and providing additional opportunity for that. But there's also been increased investment in public employment scheme, more from a social protection point of view, and here we've seen big investments in the employment expense of the growth program as well as in the community growth program. What are the areas that stand out as areas of new emphasis? The areas of new emphasis are mainly concerned with the spatial dynamics with a recognized knowledge of spatial changes and shifts taking place in South Africa. There is a revised interest in investing in the cities, and there is acknowledgement that well-planned and well-managed urbanization can accelerate economic growth. This, of course, requires a rationalization in useful infrastructure grants and how that spending in infrastructure and services takes place. Increased investment in community in municipal infrastructure should emphasize, of course, community infrastructure such as housing. There is also a recent investment here, urban investment partnership conference, to explore options of how to accelerate municipal infrastructure investment in urban areas. Treasury is, of course, working very closely with financial institutions to figure out, to develop options to expand the municipal debt market through a municipal bond that we need to finance this expansion of the municipal infrastructure. Government needs to transform basically urban spaces over time in terms of residential areas, employment, and economic activity through trade. We've seen the expansion of a variety of different trade centers in the key urban areas of the settlements. Macros, specifically, Cape Town, Iguani, and Kuruleni, these are the areas, I think, where there's been a lot of planning and investment in infrastructure, and that, I think, is moving ahead very well. There's been a reform infrastructure grant at the local government level, basically to scale up this social housing infrastructure and upgrade the informal settlement. And these are positive developments. Specific, and the last point to highlight is the increased expenditure in grants over time, especially to provide healthy infrastructure, electricity, schooling, clinics, and water. And finally, we have to highlight also the increased emphasis given to areas that are particularly marginalized, the trade center priority rural municipal districts. And we are very pleased to notice this increased emphasis on these more marginalized areas, both in terms of linking them to urban areas of development, as well as fostering development within these areas in a variety of different levels. There will be increased grant for these rural municipalities to eradicate the backlog that hampers development in these areas. And then this investment is also aimed at increasing mobility and movement of people to urban areas and movement of economic activity between rural and urban areas to create opportunities for innovation and growth in these rural-urban economies, as well as to boost market opportunities for agriculture and rural enterprises in rural areas. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, my area of expertise is in racism, sexism, and health context. So I want to speak about special cohesion, even though it wasn't a priority area on the recent result. And I do so for one particular reason. 2015 has been a turbulent year in our country. People are beginning to call it the year of the hashtag revolution. There have been many cases in which inequality in our society has become very apparent. We know this from watching the news, from being in the things that part of our society. And so when we speak about the medium-term strategic framework, when it speaks about a diverse, social, cohesive society, I want to ask colleagues, where is it in budget? And the only place I can find it is 50 million rand in the cost of the arts and culture budget. We are not going to be able to embark on grand bargains in our society. We are not going to be able to increase efficiencies. We are not going to be able to increase income. We're not even going to be able to speak of a wealth tax without a sense of the vision of a social cohesive society. And I think it's really important when you think about social cohesion to think beyond slave holes in schools. And I think it's really important to think beyond a summit every 4 or 5 years on social cohesion. My argument is that social cohesion is misunderstood or poorly understood, definitely under research, and definitely underfunded, if it's funded at all. And I really want to appeal to the committee as we think through how money is shifted, is that without some sense of social cohesion as part of the priority, we're not going to be able to make inroads into health, education, the civil service, and job creation, economic growth. And my slides speak to just a few issues. And one is trust in government. I think that is an important issue that we need to look at. My own research recently has shown that as soon as we start speaking about a wealth tax, increasing taxation, people start saying, well, the only government that eradicates the 55 billion rand corrupt scheme. Well, the 55 billion rand is an unsubstantiated figure. People have quoted somebody who quoted somebody else, but we never actually ascertained the extent of corruption. What is corruption costing the fiscus? At the moment, the figure comes from somebody from Transparency International says about 24% of our procurement budget. But we don't actually know what the figure is. It could be more, it could be less. My feeling is that it's probably less, but what it does is it leaves government with a huge perception problem that we need to fix before people are going to want to give into their pockets to support the wealth tax, for example. The second piece of research that over the last few years, since 94, has shown that contact between race groups is actually diminishing. People are less in contact with each other, except for the middle class. And so that whole idea of making some kind of sacrifice in order for other people to be uplifted is something that we really need to focus on if we get to come towards socially cohesive society. And I think you've seen this in terms of class conflict. People want to feel that they're part of the connection, and South Africa remains one of the most unequal countries in the world. The thing that has also been relating is violence, the issue of violence in our country. I believe that it speaks to part of the fact that we are a fractured society. And it's not just the actual physical violence that happens in crime, in social protest, in police response to protest, but it's also the violence that happens because people feel disenfranchised, unable to participate in a huge collective or a vision of South Africa. And I think that is something that we need to understand, and clearly in each of the departments for which appropriations are being made, that people need to understand a bit more about what it might mean to become a South African with a vision that will allow the system to influence these far-reaching changes. The GAC budget was the one that I spent some time on particularly, and one of the things that I noticed at the last slide is that there are dialogues, there's some money allocated for national dialogues. And one of the problems in the budget that I can see is that they haven't been able to find a service provider. And I think that that's actually not unusual. It's because it's such a big issue that you really need some expertise to be able to think about how and at what level you have this kind of national dialogue. I'm not talking about a national conference. I'm talking about schools and universities and businesses to speak about what might mean to move forward as a country and what sacrifices and what contributions might be made. So I really would like to say that the 50 million that's been allocated in terms of the DAC, for flag poles and libraries, I think that is something that we need to think about across all of our departments, because otherwise we're not going to be able to do what it is that we say we want to do in terms of increasing incomes and increasing efficiency. Everybody needs to be knowing from this fact to the civil service that if they are going to be working harder, working smarter, smarter, and reducing wastage, it's because we've got a grand vision to consider for the country. So I really would like social cohesion to be part of a central part of what it is that we do when we make budget allocations. All three are critical in the life not only of social protest, but of what we have as a vision for our country going forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
one sister. Sheikh Imam. Honorable mentioned your name, you will give yourself. And the next one is Honorable Mahi. Next is Honorable Manana. Honorable Yus Nalungu. Honorable Shina from Petitone. In that order for now.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to our chairperson of our deputy, which is at the beginning of Lulac, but now that I know he's not going to understand, he's rushing from one end to the other. Let me start off by thanking you very much for the presentation that you've done, and I must say, truly, that you know, the Monsoni is perfect, and so many of the modifications, and indeed, the information that you provided us, given us very deep that it's really not going to be a challenge. My question, the first one is with you, in terms of just wanting to have 500,000 in the state, I don't know if that is really a realistic. On the one hand, you're asking for 500,000 graduates, and yet you're having thousands of graduates that come, all of them are in the state. But for me, what's the point in producing graduates in the state? And like you have also alluded to, they are not directly into the system, and maybe our funding should be in line with the skills of the country, not just what. Because what I notice is that going to university, it's become like a passion. Everybody could go. And maybe when you talk about free, you still got to understand what is free education. Free education is free. Because to understand I'm getting on the ground, free, I pay for nothing, so everything is free. I really don't know if that's really possible, but ultimately, I mean, that is the intention, we want to provide free. But again, based on the needs, because you provide so many graduates with no work, what are they supposed to do? So rather, and yet we are still short, and we are now importing our Cuba and everywhere else. Whilst on that, I would say that for me, I believe that I'm not sure that we are at a WCA to be able to afford absolutely free education. Maybe it should really be based on the need of that. And commitment as well, because if you say the NSF funding, NSF has nothing coming. Now, if you talk about giving free education, then you must do it with the NSF funding. There's no point in doing it, because at the moment, it's not working. Giving that funding, they are not employed and they can't pay. Or someone not employed and are not paying, it's not being managed. So there's a serious damage there already. Next one. The other problem that I have is that, and I think that you have identified the challenges in terms of implementation and rest. We have the capacity, the ability. And a lot of these things we've identified, and I'm glad that you're coming from this perspective. But the question is, where do we go from here? Because time and time again, you're talking about, right? It's 14, I'm not saying. It's a year now that I'm going to create the next static conference. And we will lead the static among the static countries that we are going to manufacture and export within the region, some stuff in the region. That's not happening. So, the opportunity is that we're not getting this quantity of everything. So, if you're talking about the private sector, Francis has also got a challenge, because I think there's a challenge in terms of the labor cost and the period from all industries are gone. Manufacturing here and advisors are gone. Leather industry is gone. Plastic industry is gone. They are going away. There needs to be a balance somewhere. But unless we get out there and start introducing some incentive and get people to come out again. And I think I said that the other day, you were not present. I get about 6 messages every day from China. On every other product that they want, that they are selling, and that they are manufacturing. And that is how they network, that they have an organization that every manufacturing industry or company in the whole of China has got one database of them, and so they send you information to them. Now we have got capable people in this country that can go out there and manufacture on the system list, but we want to rather take easy route and start importing it, whereas we can manufacture, create that environment, create that employment, good economy. So that for me is the other challenge.
you talk about cutting costs in the university, I don't know, because it's talking that if you're going to cut costs, you're going to now, it's going to affect the quality of education. But I also understand the problem is that since we are funding this university, they must, a particular must also be based on me. There's no point in everybody producing certain work and usually going away. The issue of the medical to the serious problem is now we are, our students are studying in Cuba as well, I think it's about 2,700. And an army cost, we need to improve on that as well. So one good thing I think in terms of the health is we have now identified there's about 400 excess doctors available in the region, which is part of the public region, and I think the High Commission has a few bucks in the process now of getting them in terms of the NHR, because that's where our challenge is more today. So that's a very good thing. And I'm happy that we now begin to start pursuing the study of this. We've also spoken about infrastructure development, railroad, network and everything. If you start funding the African Development Committee, but we haven't really paid any attention to it yet, and we've agreed on that already. The motion was proposed and it was unanimously accepted. We need to take the funding. The other challenge that I wanted to know, you know, there's an estimation of about 35 million women in the country. I'm estimating about 200 million. Now let me tell you how I'm estimating. Corruption, maladministration, incompetent officials, wasteful expenditure, but over and above all that, very important. Because let me tell you what I identify and what is happening and what has been expecting. The guy gets appointed because there's also some loopholes in the system of regular and irregular expenditure, and that's creating problems. So one guy gets appointed and says, you know what, my cousin has been married, okay, I've got 50 people and it's going to cost me too many of them. He decided, see that road they let's fix? Doesn't really work. No, we make a research schedule. So they go up, believe me, that is exactly what happened. He decides, thus, now that becomes a priority. Once you stop that contract, go and get those three changes on that system because you're below 500,000 or whatever it is. Let's think about how he decides who's going to be on that three people. That he's got, he has a strong unit, he has a unit, more often than one or three of them, our companies with different names. And that is going on, and that's how we are making it. But at the same time, I don't know, maybe this is one of the exercises you should do it. Take some of these contacts, if they have to take contacts, and go out, and I know it's going to be a lot of work, and try and compare them and go down to the nitty gritty of the sea. How much cheaper we could have bought this, how much would we have saved if we take all the necessary measures and ensure that the road there is costing 1 million rand, the rest of the gate is not costing 5 million rand and so on. How much was it? They cost it for sand and stones and tar, and how much they cost in there, how much they cost for labor and all the food. Maybe we need to. There's an added to that challenge is most contracts, because of the variation or the opportunity that they have there, one contract in Devon went from 70 million to 350 million. There's a new thing they have found. You start the contract on those houses, no problem. Next thing we found rock salt, stone. So now put up 6 million rand extra. So this is challenges we are seeing. So that's why I'm estimating it as high as that, because I can tell you now, people are making money out of the forest. That is quite a gap. And that's what people are getting frustrated, and there's no trust from the people on the ground. They don't trust us. Because they believe there are few of us. And actually also, the reality is, there are people on the, if you don't know the right people, you get nothing, you never succeed, you make no money. I tell you. No matter what mechanism we talk about, we put in place. If you know the right people, you'll get the right contract. You'll get jobs. You'll make money. Now, I'm also saying this because of some of my experience at a local, at a council level, and some of experience. And that's what I've said. Would these committees, because municipal public accounts, they tell me no cost of believe me, no fees to buy at all. They are undermining by these authorities. So that will be also have a question to have a serious challenge. You know, in terms of the higher education, I read every child not in the now we're talking about in wealth tax on those people that want we generally bring this. There's already a burden on the taxpayer in the country. Now we want to go with it. And I think if you want to find that money, find it from other sources like corruption, fraud, and waste for the expenditure, and maybe reprioritize and bring that money. Rather than now we're going to put more burden on the taxpayers. So that's what we need to do.
We also don't have the will to want to take action. Will to take action against non-Muslims? Year in and year out, people come and tell you, I didn't do this, I haven't said. It's beautiful body for infrastructure. How about you not get it? That's why we are in grants. The reason for introducing more and more grants is because somebody hasn't done their job. That's what it's all about. Somebody is taking their job. So what we do like is we have been wanting everything, we have a crazy committee overseas, because somebody is also doesn't do their work.
Institution that has a system in those recommendations. It's easy
for me to sit here and say, get rid of the public sector, get rid of the, you know, the employees. But I'm not going to be able to come with a number and a policy in terms of what skills we need in the public sector. And I think that's where the problem is. Because we heard recently from a department of water, I think it was water sanitation, one of the departments, and what they indicated was that they are inherited employees, and they cannot get rid of the employees, obviously, because of the legislation. But obviously, you cannot just get rid of the employees if you don't know where to get rid of. So what happened is that they throw up the department of employees who cannot do the job. And that's why you would find that there is a use of consultants in all of these departments. The increase in taxes cannot be a good suggestion. I mean, increase in taxes, we might deliberate and debate about the wealth tax, which is another, you know, I'm dealing with that. But increasing taxes is going to do more damage to our economy that is at the point that is the way it is. We can't look at increasing taxes. In my view, there is enough money in the economy to pay for what we want. There is enough. It's just that it is not being used properly. That for the current situation that we find ourselves in, we can fund what we need. But it's not being used properly, and that's where the problem is. With regards to our audit, and I see we put accounting system in slide number 33. Maybe one of the flaws in our system is that we do compliance audits, we do financial statement audits, and maybe, of course, we don't do operational audits. That's why we cannot determine the extent to which our operations are not effective and efficient. So you notice I'm spending time on efficiency and effectiveness of operations, but clearly, that's a lot of money for you. So I'm just going to do one more to allow me to, and apologies for this one, I'm not going to be much, but as you say, on this cost in the country a substantial amount of money. And again, we hear in an ask for 9.3 billion, and I'm hoping it's not in addition to the 10.3 billion that we just appropriated in my recently, but yesterday, we know it's not enough. We know South African Post Office have not paid their staff, and they're struggling. It's not the first month, and then sometimes in the last month. So they just need a cash problem. And again, you know, if you look at recently asked the question about this particular areas, and you find that members of the board, they are fully 4.5 billion, 3 billion, 4.5 billion, 3 million, 3.6 million, that cannot be justified. The amounts of salary of directors, that all they do is attend meetings and that they don't do the deal. So maybe one should look at, again, the board, the composition of the board, and who sits on the board instead of the services that are provided by the state.
What is the outcome of the
few issues from my side. The slide that talks to comparison between countries, expenditure of countries on higher education. For instance, you made an example of South Africa and India. And India spending more than ourselves. But you know, one of the covenants would probably be the size of the Indian population of 1.3 million people in the compared to South Africa. Between 63 and 64 million young people. So it might be a bit difficult to make an informed judgment. It would probably be of interest to the committee to see a comparison between South Africa's population and one or two other countries with almost a similar number of population. That's one part of it which would like you to be. But also, I don't know whether you have also checked on how expensive is South Africa's education compared to the other countries, the India or any other country, so that we understand if we are not funding education enough, and we say that we don't have enough resources as a country to fund for free education, at least for now, but we are leading towards free education. Is it because we don't have enough resources, or is it because our education is too expensive? But linked to that question as well, I think that we need to also find out from universities. I know you have made mention of universities being a lot more efficient in their place. But we need to tell you what exactly, what are the findings? And I raise this issue because we ourselves said, and you have also indicated the question of skills, that our higher education is going to produce skills which so far are not responding to the needs of the economy. So, and we raise this issue because I think it was in about November, December 2013 when 350 expatriates came back into the country. And by the end of January of the following year in 2014, all 350,000 were absorbed by the economy, which tells you a story, which says they are lost in the country by the country. And our post-matric education is not provided. What is our higher education or post-education fund? You increase the university, you're funding something that does not respond to the economy. So what are you doing? But linked to that, one time I was on Google and stumbled on jobs, quite a bit later. And I saw online publicity, online publicity, the private sector saying that we have so many jobs. And this time, all those jobs were free jobs. Again, it tells you that there are jobs in the economy, in the country. They are not being taken out because our education is not prepared. That are required. So, that are required in the education. Higher education is required. subject of this issue we see that quite closely. Because otherwise, when poor continue to pour money into education, sleep upon, and still not produce what we want. But also leads to that we need to really look a little deeper into the commitment of students themselves. One time I was saying, well, if you say to people, well, everybody's going to go to university, but I don't have to commit to study and finish. Because it's very good to say universities are not providing for students who come up, who come from poor backgrounds, which is true. Because we need that reach as well. We need it. Universities have got to provide that kind of reach to enable the students to go at a better university, but are the students themselves committed? So that's the second part that one would like to tease out a little bit is if we say NSFAS is funding new students, and it's good that the government has done that, but do we have an instrument which actually can effectively determine who is the new student? Because if I get my child to university and I ask my child to say, get your grandma to say that she's receiving pension and she how do you determine that Nazoraza is working in public and therefore is fortunately sneaking in his son or daughter in university? Free. And I cannot help. So this thing of free education has got to be relooked at. And a lot more details got to come out. Because we must also begin to say, if we say free education, how much do we going to cost the country? And put the figures down. Now what we said is, the question of things, okay. Would you be able to tell how effective Palama is in producing good kids in the marketplace? I recall that when the Honourable Minister of the Sudan, she launched the public sector academy, how effective are we launching internal capacity building institutions, but I'm not sure whether they are producing the demand that we want. Why is it that our public sector, long after Palama was operational, and then this new academy, we still don't have the team? What about the issue of attrition? The other issue, the same point that applies, I think it's a bit confusing because you're saying government needs to be sorted out and we agree 100%. Government, in relation to the board of and in relation to those officials who are running these institutions on a daily basis, CFOs, CEOs, etc., ready to sort out that mess, because they're messy. But then you go on and say that more money must be pumped into it. We must start finding out why have they been paid when they were capitalized, and many of them are operating as semi-private institutions, private businesses. Where have been the leaks? Because quite clearly, we will sort out government, but we don't close the financial leaks, we will come back to pay. the social censorship issue, man, I must say, for me, that there was something quite new. And I think the community appreciates that more than anything else. Because the level of violence of various forms is extremely different. And to suggest that art and culture are known, we're going to deal with the issues relating to building social professions and in the process eliminating a lot of all these kinds of violence and racism would be asking too much of that demand. So I whilst I don't have a question, I do want to express my appreciation for raising that particular issue and all its attendant part of it to the level of budget, because quite clearly very little is being spent about budget. That speech to a unit is this. Yesterday we had the colleagues are saying, everybody saying they are violent when they face the violent crisis. But they ask the question, what are we supposed to do? And now they're saying, give us X amount of money for pension to be reaching the best. So that we can purchase this kind of equipment, which would help us be less violent, even if we face a violent crime. So, the police know what they can do, provided they are given the necessary resources to buy the necessary equipment. So this issue of police being really violent, it is not correct for us to attack them in this fashion. We want to look at what is we are providing them with, so that they can react in a manner that is better. So certainly people will be less violent as well, if the police are able to be less violent or non-violent in their reaction to the crime. So violence is violence. They provoke the police with stones, they will react violently. But we blame the police and not me who throw the stone at the police or whatever other member. So it's a matter that leads to what you elevated to a level that you should really pick up a fair attention. And thank you for that. Yes,
thank you. Sorry, I have to do this. In my understanding, South Africa is sitting on a ticking time bomb in terms of health. The issue of health is so serious, and I agree with the education and health to go together. And the approach of the minister is correct in that prevention rather than cure. The issue of diabetes and other illnesses in the country and obesity is so serious that there's going to come a time when your entire budget is not going to be enough to address the challenges of health in the country. And there's going to be no human resource available to use as well. That's how serious the problem is at the state, and that's where it's going to be. And there seems to be no balance between World Trade Organization and World Health. World Trade is only interested in profits, commercial, and World Health wants to protect our people. What is your advice in terms of South Africa where we should be very close? I know there are some measures being put, but I don't think it's adequate for people who are serious problems. Thank you.
Allow me to respond to your question.
Thank you very much, Chair, for your answer to the question. I put an issue, I think, 9 periods that have written the damage. Come out of the number 14 issues that have been made. And they are about the number of students raging in the country, the question of skill set alignment, the question of corruption, the question of the public service and the line, the question of nutrition, the question of funding for interviews, and lastly the question Christian behind him, and encourage his eyes that I will not gain knowledge of what he is and the school and what you got to do. Let me first of all say thank you very much for the spirit in which you've been able to conduct these engagements. In preparing for coming to you, I understood that our colleagues and managers often ask the question every year, what do you do with your life if you do? So we'd like to ask that to you. I'm very pleased that Honourable Secretary has said that. Oh, what's wrong with you? Sorry, I've spoken about this oversight responsibility and what it is that we can do as a research agency mandated to be looking at the question that public goods can be offering you. And I'd like to say to you that we'd like to be as helpful as we can. Our mandate is to be providing the best information that is available in the country on the issue towards trying to resolve those issues by the policymakers, the lawmakers, and the implementers of those issues. So we're very happy to leave our cards. We can have a long discussion about how we work, and you know, our commitment is there. We won't be into that, but we're very keen to get our assistance. Let me start by looking at the question of the number of graduates, the number of students that have come up now a few times. That's completely right, Colin. We have a misalignment. There's a misalignment here between what is happening in terms of the output from the university and the skills that are required inside of the economy. And it's not now. It's been 10 days ago. The majority of our students in the country are registering for degrees in the social sciences, which are business here. I don't want us to be reducing the degree of funding in the social sciences, but we're not attracting enough students into mathematics. And that's an absolute fact. And I'm saying that to you as a structural reality in the country, which we need to be staring in the face. The fact that we cannot produce mathematics teachers who are capable of taking our students to grade 12 mathematics when it does fail to go to a mathematics exam is a major problem. And so we have to be paying a whole lot more attention to building up our technical capacity in the country. At the same time, I would say to you, those technical people need our kind of education. They need to be able to understand what the value is of education. There is an alignment problem there. But the field will show you, though, and this is really crucial, actually, graduate unemployment in the country is considerably lower than the unemployment rate for students who finish with graduate. Considerably lower. Our graduate unemployment rate in the country at the moment is about 10%. And I know many people anecdotally know many students who finish degrees and want to be picked up, but most students who have degrees ultimately are on to find a job of one kind or another. So even though they're not going and channeled in the right kind of direction, they are being motivated. So that's a really important point, I think, for us to understand. We cannot take money away from the university right now. You know, we cannot take, even though, as we're saying, the distribution of where the money is going inside the university is an issue we can't take money away. The question of the tax regime in the country, I think, is a very complicated one. I'm going to meet my colleague here to talk about it. The point of departure that I personally have been using here is that actually working people have prospered more in the country over the last 15 years, and I'm better in the country in the last 15 years than for the last 15 years. And that's an absolute fact. And we need to come to terms with how to manage the reality that some of us are becoming more comfortable and others not. And that's a clear moral issue which our tax regime, I think, has to come to to turn with. But how you do that? I recognize the challenges that this might put in people thinking of integrating and all of that and so on. But do you have a real urgent questions around our citizenly obligation right now? I'm going to hand over to my colleague Jeffrey Davis to kick us off with these questions of particularly the tax regime piece, if you don't mind, and if you also think about funding, it's very easy. Okay?
Thank you very much, colleagues. Now, when we talk about tax regime discussion, of course, is vitally important for all members in our year because that is the primary source of income per se. So if we want to be all unemployed, then we shouldn't be discussing and touching on issues around the tax regimes. And tax regimes, of course, vary all over the world. But if we pay particular attention to the tax regime, and in my presentation, I try to touch on two or three elements of it. What we are trying to discuss here is basically you have what we call the indirect or regressive tax regime and taxes. Those, and this is the VAT. And the minister indicated in his speech the potential and the discussions and debates within Treasury that they are likely to revisit the VAT system. Right? Now, we don't want to go back to 2021 years ago when this was a topical debate and the views issues around zero rating and so forth to protect the poor. But when you deal with aggressive taxation, that is the big challenge that you're confronted with. Now, if you enter that domain, you can't discuss and consider all these other things as well. You can't consider it relative to other parts of the world. And for that being relative to other parts of the world, it is comparable to countries like Brazil and the general BRICS category and group of countries with regard to the more indirect regressive taxes, specifically focusing on consumer-oriented products. But we are raising the issue of the probability of raising taxes. I mean, the fundamental problem with regressive taxes or indirect taxes is they fall very heavily on people with lower income who spend on the same commodity. So both of us are going to the store, we buy a commodity that a rich and poor person will go to the store, buy commodities, the same commodity that's of VAT relative to the income of the poor person, say actually paying more. Right? So that would be central thing issue about those kind of facts. And I think in the policy debate and discussion happening within Treasury at the moment in revisiting VAT, I think that's the issue that they can. And then we have the other side of running an equal society where you have the top income brackets, the corporates, and others who are really very, very wealthy people. Very, very wealthy people, making South Africa, of course, one of the most extreme, unequal countries in that mid-income country range. If you compare it to other countries, South Africa would be probably within the top two or three countries that is unequal. And that is a recognized fact. It comes through in all sorts of different statements. Now, in that particular context, how do you provide services and how do you ensure that the state is able to provide the necessary services in line with each of the constitutional obligations? It's trying to find sources of revenue. And a key source of revenue is actually would be your top income bracket. Now, here is where you where we have seen in South Africa a decline in the top marginal tax rate, and that has become a big, big concern. And therefore, there is nothing to speak about goods, that this is an area that also requires revisiting. Yeah? So what we've actually been doing is that, and from our analysis, is that what we've been compensating for the decline in the marginal top level, income level taxes, salary taxes, is being increasing in levels of debt. And this is a trade-off that we've got to revisit very carefully because it's got serious, spin-off effects and implications. Now, if you do not want to raise further taxes at the direct level of the person, direct income level taxes, you have a variety of other kinds of options. Options of taxes on different types and forms of wealth, housing, shareholding taxes, land, and so forth. So these are the options available to us that we have to consider. And in a country where you have vast inequalities, I don't think we have a lot of options. We can either go for the indirect taxes, where we penalize the poor more, or go for wealth-oriented taxes that will reduce the gap between the rich and the poor. That is the easy option that we went with. There were one or two other questions that they asked that I think are very, very important. And one of these is linked to the export and exporting to other parts of the world. But I think this export portfolio, or the range of commodities that we export, we dominated still by minerals. We've been very slow to diversify the export portfolio of the South African economy. And now that there is an opening up for diversifying the export portfolio, in other words, moving it beyond this primary minerals, whether it's beneficiation minerals, or really into secondary minerals, like in manufacturing or in other areas, we have to find the appropriate market. In manufacturing, the difficulty is in Canada, is against lower wage countries, really. What do you do there? That's the difficulty. So increasingly there is interest in the business community, in the private sector, to consider Africa as a key export destination. Now, Africa would be a useful export destination only for the limited range of manufacturing products. But in minerals, it doesn't make sense. Fish have all the minerals in Africa. And so this is an area that we have to think about very, very carefully on how to expand or diversify the export portfolio of the African economy. At the same time, the downstream problems in the country have also been as a consequence of the import side. On the import side, we've had the old problem of not being able to produce the necessary manufacturing equipment required to drive the African economy. So that is an area where we have to invest in and kind of bring together skills development and the ability to capture the value added to commodities. So developing a high-skilled, technologically innovative manufacturing component industry is key for that. And South Africa has not been able to do that. It's an area where we require quite a huge load of investment. If we want to drive an export volume, if we want to reduce the heavy imports, the other concern of imports, of course, is the importation of expensive consumables. And the importation of expensive consumables is not something very difficult to understand in the context where you have the kind of world anymore. The rich people go and shop overseas. And they bring the expensive cars and things. And so this is what you were running to. So how do you deal with the demand complexity in different environments if you want to attack and address?
Thanks.
My sense starts with the question here is about why we should put more money into SOE. I mean, to put not come to more money into SOE, we're not recommending that, but today we put money that may obviously be there to see the difference. We are identified by governments and accountability as citizens. And what that means is that this is where the resources should be come to strengthen the governments and accountability. An enterprise does not necessarily have to be ineffective, inefficient, simply because it's a state of this right. And we see the challenges arising from issues of accountability and coverage. The other question was about the salaries of boards of directors and composition of the boards. Now, we have to keep my suggestions for the committee on stakeholders and the president. The thing we need to do is that we're going to be research document. I mean, it's necessary to look at the research document that are actually very important. There's a lot of material that works in the report. It comes from the director of the conduct. I didn't think it was very interesting. They are very revealing. you would find a small industry, which has a high rate of all this, the resistance to the dark class. Not a single factor. The committee attempts to resolve it. The whole industry is in the government. Which is over a performance management. How do we resolve issues of performance management? Finally, there is an opportunity. The sound recommendation that came out there was the development of SOP law. That I am not sure, because to me, was clearly not making the decision there. And trying to figure out how to implement the curriculum in here. So you can't be sure. How do you raise the funding? How do you raise the funding? There are many recommendations around funding. So, but the issue of remuneration was very, very well debated there, and we had people who had a viewpoint about this from the committee. So, there are some elements that might come out of the report that can be put into the education that might be prioritized. In the remuneration of a CEO, the remuneration of directors, and so on, that may hopefully lead to a more efficient SOP. There was one question about the implementation of institutions around the theme of school. Interestingly, this is a discussion we had in this Sunday when we were preparing the document. And another bit that was a little bit lower. There may be something that we need to pursue later to see whether there is any study that could exist and whether there should be a house study in that regard. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Thank you.
Any time the moment is conceived, not born, conceived, that's where the mother comes in, and it's very important, has a growth curve. After the plant is born, and then the growth curve of any life. And we have to grow in weight, a certain rate, we have to grow in height, have to grow in intellectual capacity, and so forth, every child grows up. Now, if you project a line to be like that, a child that is not well nourished, not well looked after, lives in an environment that is inconducive or not conducive to growing, instead of growing there, and it's growing there. If you now talk about the child's height, obviously the child is shorter, and that will cause stacking. And that is the biggest problem. That's what we think of there. And something is worth another way, if one can tell us, because it indicates a chronic situation, in other words, it develops over years. It didn't develop yet here in that school. And it's also bad because the longer it remains undiagnosed and the child is growing, the more difficult it is to develop. And it has a lot of economic impact. The most vulnerable for these courses, the national level, with the intellectual capacity, the exceeding, the ambience of the child is not what it is in potential. And before I come to the overweight, a standard child is known to be 3 to 4 times more likely to become an obese child. That's actually overweight. That is simply dangerous. In other words, instead of the child growing, the child could have more weight, the child is growing on it. So you get an overweight all of these times. And it is a test. That's the key part. What type of test? We always thought that obesity is a feature of the well-to-do. Wrong again. It is less common among the poor, or less affluent, it is less affluent. are increasing our returns in poor environments because the excess is used to eat the food that are nutrient poor and energy deficit. So it is a slogan. And these are issues that we need to address now because a big child is much more likely to develop diabetes, it's much more likely to develop cancer, it's much more likely to develop hypertension as an adult. And all these cost money. And that is where time bomb issues step forward. Now, you tell us that that's smart. We misadvised one time bomb, which my colleague here has been in the front of, four front of, called 898, it was my goodness. We are in control. We are not there yet, we are controlling. You are not supposed to. And look. But we learned a lot of it. The question now is about the time bomb. They're not looking in with 898. We are dealing with exactly what you said. Diabetes, hypertension, cancer, obesity. And that's the official line of the WHO. In our country, we say no, there are other conditions that are important. Internet, they're all part of the so-called non-communicable diseases, strength of the musculoskeletal disease, and a number of other conditions that are and an expensive for two ways. One, because the medicines are too expensive for a lifetime, diabetes is not for one today, the back cost. And we have to address that. And the second reason they're expensive is because of our drumming stables. You know why? Because they're not compliant. The state is a field. Let us blame ourselves for a change. We don't get them. Now, why we don't get them? There are many reasons which we need to understand. So, your description of a time bomb, if that's correct, then I can circulate some papers which we have written regarding the cost of obesity, regarding the cost of inaction, in other words, if we don't then we are looking at the cost of diabetes. And also how can we become smarter in treating these conditions in a way that the future will lose timely and be more convenient. You can't also do that. You know. And that is the great thing that I could see. And I can step there to help you.
I wanted to address the question that we issued a lot of treats very great for my education. For me, one of the things around NSF is to run it the way we run SEPA. Because that way, I think over the years, we've shown some improvements in corruption and finding out who the people are in terms of what people fabricate when it comes to accepting grants. And so NSF could be run in a similar way, it would cost some money, but it would be an efficient mechanism. The other is that we mustn't conflate free education with open education. In Germany, higher education is free, but it's not open. It's very difficult to get into university in Germany. And I think that is a debate that is really part of the national conversation. And then the last point of education is we mustn't only have technical education in physical skills because it's the people who study in humanities and social sciences who are going to help us to form society that we want to live in terms of social cohesion, art, culture, religion, literature. And I think that's really important point that we mustn't become so technical. Yes, we must have skills and good economy, but we also need to grow our society as human beings. On the corruption issue, the slide I listed was making this point, that corruption is often a political pinata, the only thing that these details will just explode. Everybody blames corruption, but if you look at our BRICS partners, they are all faring much worse than we are on the issue of corruption, and yet they are all managing to grow the economy. So it's not the thing that we must blame for a lack of growth of our economy. Yes, we must put it out and work it out, but it must become the thing that stops us from being on do the things that we can do. So I think that's what the point is, that slide is making. And then the point of clarity around the national dialogue with DAP, in the midterm budget of DAP, they were just saying that they haven't spent their money because they can't find a service provider. In my experience, though, the problems with getting a service provider to do something like national dialogue is ending up on the conference. And we don't need another conference in social cohesion. We need things in the curriculum, we need a strategic plan in all departments and in civil society for how we can encourage social cohesion. And one example is in Nigeria. There's a community service program, all graduates, even in the medical arena. But all graduates in Nigeria go and work in a community unlike theirs. And what it does is it's developing an issue on social cohesion because there are issues of conflict between Muslim and Christian and between ethnic groups in Nigeria. And that's the long in fact. And that's, for example, we need innovative ideas around driving things like social cohesion more than something else. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any quick for us? Not long? Quick for us? No?
Okay. We're talking about the systems to the tech entities. You can just name what you want. Tell us a little bit. My concern is when you sell assets like Vodafone shares, it's so beneficial to bring this from the revenue rather than disposing of that, that's not something that's not making a profit. We shall touch them with care, and that's what we need. I'm very concerned about the energy transition. And secondly, about population and growing. I noted that it's increasing year in and year out, but the output is not in line with the amount of money that we are spending.
Yes, sir.
Focus on shifting the growth in the public wage for from this, top end people to real people can really do the work on the ground. That's the challenge that you say that is confronted. And once you've done that, you have to, I think, switch to the general kind of performance monitoring approach to ensure that the services are delivered efficiently and so forth. To get the right people qualified to do the right kind of job that can bring about change. Don't disappoint top level people to be overseers.
Thank you very much for your input. Thank you very much for your.
credibility here today. We would like to resume a member of the committee that should stay a few minutes longer, so that we can give it the amount of 7 minutes. Just before that, I'm not sure. Thank you very much.